Ron and Anian.
We're finally recalling cars with defective airbag modules, and now there's less than 200,000 of them on the road. How come we didn't do it 5 years ago when the numbers were doubled or tripled?
The Car Doctor.
How could it be 12 to 14 years and they finally figured out there's a problem? I don't understand that. And then somebody's going to have the audacity to tell me I pick on engineers? You guys are this bad that it took you 14 years to figure it out?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome. Ronnie Neaney, the Car Doctor, rolling along at 855-560-9900. Let me say that again slow. Hey, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. Ha, 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 ha. Anyway, 855-560-9900. Thanks for stopping by. And maybe you're continuing the hour. We've had an hour before. This is our second hour. If you're just tuning in, we're glad to have you here with us as we spend this day together talking about cars and their problems. If you're new to the radio show, we're glad to have you too, as we've picked up a couple of affiliates this week. And we continue to sit there and say, hey, we're just trying to fix cars and share what's inside my head before I forget the rest of it, and tell you what's going on and how to resolve that thing in the driveway you call an automobile that we call, oh boy, sometimes, and sometimes other things as well. 43 years of auto repair sitting here behind this microphone waiting to do its work for you, and call them like I see them, and hopefully I do a better job than Major League Baseball umpires.
We're not talking about baseball. We're talking about football. The Giants play tomorrow. They play Cleveland. You need to bash the Giants.
So, in other words, the Giants are going to be the first team to lose to Cleveland.
Let's hope not.
Would not surprise us.
Tom and I take them at face value Sunday.
So the Giants are now, what's their record, 6-3?
Yeah, 6-3.
So tomorrow, Cleveland will be 1-9.
Let's hope not.
1-9.
The Giants last week set a record. Second play, and I was already swearing at the TV.
Well, that's because you guys take all this seriously.
See, yes, we do.
You want me to explain auto repair and sports to you guys?
Please do.
The deal is the Giants continue to lose. Look at the Jets. Holy cow. All right?
You know, the only thing
the Giants have going on is they got the Jets in their own neighborhood. All right? So, but look at the Jets. Look at the Giants. And they continue to drop balls, miss kicks, not score touchdowns, and people still keep coming to the games. If I or my other brothers and sisters in auto repair ever drop the ball, miss the field goal, didn't win the game, nobody's coming back to us. Mechanics have to be perfect every time. Period. But tomorrow, Cleveland, 1-9. That's the prediction.
I've consulted
the crystal ball. I want you to know I'm doing everything I can to put the whammy on them, because then the week after that,
They play Dallas.
And I kind of got to hope that they beat Dallas, but...
And you know, Christmas is coming, and I told Tony if he wasn't nice to me, if he's naughty, he's going to get Cleveland Brown stuff for Christmas.
Well, he might not take it after the Giants lose to them tomorrow. Let's move on with the show, you two. I love you, but you're driving me nuts. Yes, you want my prediction, Tony, so you feel better? The Giants are going to lose. There, I said it. Now, when the Giants win, Tony will just keep rubbing the good luck charm that's known as the Car Doctor. Let's kick the garage doors open. Now that you guys killed the opening monologue, I forget what the heck I was even going to talk about. Doesn't matter. Let's go over and talk to Chris in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Chris, help me. These guys are Giants fans. What can I tell you? What's going on?
Well, we're Packers fans, and we're not doing a whole lot better. So
yeah, well, you know, it's and listen, I guess they really enjoy this call because they get to rub it in about those two games that the Giants and the Packers played, trying to get into those bowl games that kind of disrupted the charts there a little bit, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
It happens. You know what, Chris, I got to tell you, I read Vince Lombardi's book. I'm kind of a Packers fan too, but don't tell anybody.
It'll be our secret.
Yeah, it'll be our secret. So what's going on?
I got a 2001 Ford Focus. I bought it. I normally drive a 2004 Crown Vic. It's kind of my little toy car. So I put it away for the winter. I bought a 2001 Ford Focus. It's got the 2-liter ZTEC with the 5-speed manual transmission. it runs good. It drives good. About a week after I bought it, I bought a Matco scan tool. I think it's just a rebranded Launch X431.
Gotcha.
So it's I love it, and I kind of went with the Launch brand based on what you had to say about them. Anyway, so I plug it in, and I just, how's it doing? No codes. It didn't have any codes. It ran good. One thing I noticed is cylinder head temp. And now, I know this one just has a cylinder head temp sensor. It doesn't have a coolant temp sensor per se, but they use cylinder head temp to infer coolant temp on these things. So coolant temp on the highway, or cylinder head temp, I'm sorry, on the highway is 222 degrees. The low-speed fans per the scan tool aren't coming on until
230-some
degrees, yeah, or something like that.
Well, they'll come
and,
on.
Yeah, what?
Low-speed fan on that car comes on somewhere between 225 and 232, and that is normal.
Yep, I think that's what... Yeah. Right, I think that, and I thought that sounded high. I mean, now my Crown Vic, and I understand, you know, when you're going 70 miles down the highway, it's twice as big engine. It's turning 1,000 RPM less. It's probably not working nearly as hard. Cylinder head temp on that never gets above 195 down the highway. Never gets above 205. You know, when it's hot out. I guess, is this normal? I'm not getting any coolant loss. The oil seems clean. Nothing's, I mean, that just seems high. Now, I did notice they run an 18 or 20 PSI cap on those. So, I mean, are they intentionally getting the cylinder head temps up there for emissions?
Yep.
Or is there,
yep,
am I looking at something else?
Nope,
here?
That car is dead on the money. And here's the scary part, all right? And here's what all the so-called experts don't really think about, all right? The fact that, now on that car, high speed temp, the high speed fan comes on 240 to 245 degrees.
Right.
Yep. All right. Look how hot that thing's getting. All right. And what happens if you leave a thermostat in that car and it's 5 degrees off or 4 degrees?
Right.
We're operating that car razor thin. Okay. It's
right.
You know, 260 is meltdown. It's right on the line of meltdown. Okay.
Yeah, I can't understand why they're. I mean, if it's normal for the beast and it runs good, I'm gonna run it. I did put a new stand in it. I do that with every car I buy, whether it's acting funny or not, because I don't know how old the old one is, and it's cheap insurance. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, listen, nothing's better than a stand. We use them in the shop all the time, and you know,
I've had good luck with, never had an issue,
right,
ever with them. So.
And you're doing it right. But my point is, look at how tight they're running that. And your car, this car is not just the only one. There's a lot of cars out there that run this specific on temperature and a bunch of other things that they do in order to operate. Now start thinking about this, and this is the curveball. Go ahead. Change the oil at 7,000 miles like the manufacturer says. Change the oil,
yeah,
at 10,000 miles like everybody talks about. Are you insane?
No.
Are you out of your mind? You know, let's just run the car hot right to the ragged edge of everything and expect it to last more than 100,000 miles. I don't get it.
Right. And this has got 170 on it, and it runs good. And I mean, and it's funny you say that about oil changes. And I know you've mentioned in your past shows about not only is the oil change important, but also inspecting the vehicle. Because I changed all my own oil, and I was under it. I noticed there was an axle seal on the CV shaft. You know, where the CV shaft comes out of. Seeping, and it was, you know, and this thing only holds two quarts of fluid in the transmission.
Right.
You know, it doesn't take long for you to spray that out. So, I mean, if you're not looking under there every, you know, 3,000-4,000 miles, that's a lot. It's easy to miss that stuff, and next thing you know, you're burning up a transmission.
Right. Well, and then you're going to buy
just
a new car.
Just as an example.
So, is the is the downplay of the 3,000-4,000 mile oil change interval? Is that really the work of the marketing department to get people to have to buy new cars when the trans blows up on the 10-year-old car or 15-year-old car that they don't want to fix it anymore? And
your guess is as good as mine. Yeah.
You know, I still think about cash for clunkers and how many good cars cash for clunkers took off the street.
That's a nightmare on, you know, right. That's a nightmare in itself.
Right.
So I guess my other question would be, typically, what's the difference between cylinder head temp and coolant temp? I mean, I know obviously, you know, temperature wise. Is it 5 degrees cooler, 10 degrees cooler,
it's roughly,
it pretty close?
It's roughly a 5 to 10 degree difference. It depends on where that sensor is on the average. But on that car, it's within 5 degrees. I wouldn't worry about it. You know, what I would do too is I would just verify. You know, if you wanted to use maybe a heat gun and read the upper radiator hose and then look at the coolant temp sensor. you'll typically see, if you know, 220 degrees should be about 3.4, 3.5 volts on that car coming out of the CTS. The CHT. So if you see that, then at least you've got a point to work from. But right. You know, listen, it's just amazing how hot they make them run and what they're making them do and how right on the ragged edge they're keeping these cars, and yet people refuse to service and maintain them, and then when they blow up, they just go buy new cars. Makes no sense.
It is really amazing. I know my wife's got a 2011 Escape, and I know it's 6,000 miles or every 6 months, you know, but, you know, we're doing it 3,500, 4,000 at the most oil changes, and, you know, it's a big investment. I'm going to keep it on the road as long as possible.
And what does that oil come out? At 3,500 miles, Chris, how does that oil look when it's coming out? Is it dark? I'm just curious.
No, not too bad. It's still got a bit of a, you know, if you're looking at it through the sunlight, it's got a bit of a golden tint to it, you know, still. But I mean, if we went 5 or 6,000 miles, I don't think that'd be the case.
Right.
And we service, and I'm a truck mechanic, and we service trucks. And even though a lot of them are extending their oil change intervals to, you know, twice as long, maybe 20 or 30,000 miles, they're still getting them inspected 10 to 15,000 miles.
Now, why is that?
For the exact reason you mentioned, because if you got a coolant leak, a fluid loss, you know, you got a wheel seal, it might even have nothing to do with the engine itself. You got something starting to come apart, you got brake shoes cracking, you're going to see that on your inspection.
Right.
You know, and it's not going to get you put out of service or worse yet, cause you to be sitting on the side of the road or cause an accident.
Right. And it's it keeps the truck running longer.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Oh. So
Have you, hey, listen, Chris, let me ask you, have you updated your launch tool yet?
It was updated about, you know, it was the latest update around 2 weeks ago when I got it.
Now, does that update by wireless? Is there wireless on that tool? Or
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you'll just tap the update button and you'll see what updates come to you and bang, off you go.
Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing. And you know, I kind of, it's pricey, but at the same time, I do all my own work, and I work in all, you know, friends and family's car. We're not all driving, you know, we're all not driving 1990, you know, three, you know, Oldsmobiles and Buicks and Tauruses anymore. You know, everything's got a module, everything talks to everything. And if something's not working, we need to know, you know, I need to be able to look into it and see what the computers are telling me.
Right.
So I think it was well worth the investment. I've used the heck out of it in the first 2 weeks I've had it. So.
Now, which one is that? Is that the X431?
I believe so. Yeah, I'd have to look at the box. It's the Matco Max Go, I think they call it.
It's the new tablet.
But I think it's just... Right, it's a tablet. Yep, yeah, it's an Android-based tablet. I love it.
Are you printing from it yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
No, haven't printed anything from it yet.
Send me an email, ron@cardoctorshow.com. I'll send you the app to print from. There's a really great app, and I want to get it to you. I got to go. The clock's going to take me. Chris, pleasure talking to you. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the end of the Car Doctor, rolling along. Let's get over and talk to Mike Danella, New Jersey. Mr. Mike, how are you today, sir?
Ron, good afternoon, man. Good talking to you again.
You too. What's going on?
I'm thinking about this time of year, and my father always wanted me to help him work on the cars. And, you know, while he was inside having hot chocolate and marshmallows, he had me putting disc brakes on his Jaguar. And I was just trying to remember how cold it used to be and how much fun it was, you know, when I did that. And the reason I bring it up is because I was amazed. The last caller you had did a lot of work on his car by himself, and I think a lot more people can do it, but they just don't want to.
Right, they don't, and that's very true. Now, let me ask you a personal question, Mike.
At
what point did you lose your sight? Because I know who you are. I remember this. I remember our conversation.
I was premature by 2.5 months. So I lost my – I never had sight.
So you've been blind from birth.
Yeah.
And you're fixing cars.
Well, I used to, you know, tune them up by ear. The carburetors, we sync the carburetors on his Jaguar by ear and time it and pretty much get it on the money. There were different tests, you know, I can't drive, of course, but there were different ways we could do it by you know, putting it in fourth gear at a very low RPM and accelerating, and we could, you know, pretty much get it to the money doing that. And I always enjoyed doing that because you could bring something around and you could feel the you could feel what you were doing and realize that something was happening, if you know what I mean. Something would work out for you. You would feel a sense of accomplishment.
You are a testimony to the intestinal fortitude of the human spirit, my friend.
Well, you know, it's I thank you, Ron, but I say that only to spur some people on that really don't have any idea what goes on under the hood, because if something breaks, you know, they break a nail, they get upset.
Right.
You know, but there are ways to accomplish a whole lot, and by riding in a car that's operating properly, you can hear different things and you can feel the different problems. Matter of fact, I stand when I wait, you know, for buses and trains and stuff when I travel, and I listen to these cars go by, and I hear valve tap, I hear the car not running right, and, you know, you can smell a car that's not running, you know, that's running too rich. You know, you can hear tires that are out around, and people don't even pay attention.
Right. Because they're oblivious.
I'd say 4 out of 5 cars that pass me do that.
You know, they're oblivious. They're more concerned about their $7 cup of Starbucks coffee being just the right temperature and the right amount of foam on top of the lid.
Oh, please.
So, yeah. Hey,
that's
listen,
the least you got to worry about in life.
Mike, listen, I want to take a minute and just wish you and yours a very merry holiday season, and thanks for being such a long-term dedicated car doctor.
I appreciate your program more than ever, Ron. Thank you.
Man, you take good care. Good guy. Yeah, it's Mike's been a listener. Oh, my gosh. I got to think the better part of 15, maybe 18 years. He's been here forever. So let's go over and talk to Basil down in Valley Grove, 98 Mazda MPV, and some questions. Basil, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
We haven't been able to get you in our area for quite some time.
Okay.
But I still had my notes when I talked to you the last time on the air. And so I knew the phone number.
Okay, cool. Well, listen, you give Tom the contact info, and he'll go talk to the radio station and see what their problem is. But what affiliate, what station did you used to listen to us on?
WVLY.
WVLY.
Downsville, West Virginia.
Downsville, West Virginia. Okay, WVLY. All right, we'll have the affiliate guys go and talk to them and see what's up.
Thank you.
Anyway, what's going on?
I have a 1998 Mazda MPV, four-wheel drive.
Right.
And a friend of ours had it garaged for years, and I've had it garaged since we've had it. But the frame is completely gone.
The subframe, right, the front cradle.
The entire thing, front to back, is gone.
Okay.
I want to know, is it practical? Car has 61,000 miles on it, and I want to know if it's practical and economically feasible to replace the frame.
Probably not, simply because it's 20 years old. And the question will be, even if the parts you need to replace this are available, what's next? Just because of age, you know, where do you stop? If this was a $1,000 repair and you got 6 months out of it, and then the transmission let go, would you fix it?
Probably not.
All right, so then cut your losses. Don't even get involved. It's just, I know, it's enough to make you insane. It's like throwing out that good couch from the living room, but it just gets to a point where sooner or later it's just too darn old. Basil, I appreciate the call. I'll do what I can for you down there in West Virginia way. You have a good rest of the day. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Anning, the Car Doctor, rolling along. Let's get on over and talk to Corey in Minnesota. Some questions about a 2000 Honda. Yeah, Corey, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir. What's going on?
So, well, I had an issue with my brake lights. The wife and I had gone out at night, whatever, come home, and I thought I hadn't seen any reflection of the brake lights. All three of the brake lights were out. Bulbs were good and everything. Did a power check back there. No power. I ended up chasing it, thinking it was the brake switch. Changed out the brake switch, which was kind of a bit of a bugger to get to. but changed out, and that still didn't affect or correct the problem on there. I ended up in wringing out wires, figuring that there was an open wire somewhere on the hot. There's a white and a green and white that come off of it. When it closes, the green and white's applied back to the brake lights. I ended up jumpering that out as far as putting a new wire in there, but then kept the existing old wire up to the parking or the shift solenoid so that I could still shift the vehicle.
Right.
And driving to work the other night, the cruise light would come on, but now I can't get the cruise to work, and it was working prior. Fuses are good and everything.
Okay, did you change the brake light switch, Corey, or what did you change?
I did, yep.
Okay.
Brand new brake light switch on there.
Brand new from where?
AutoZone.
Okay.
I put it on the bench, checked it, all looked good. And
Do we need to review what new means? if you're a regular listener, you know what I'm going to tell you new means. Anyway, the brake light switch has main input to the cruise.
Yeah.
All right? So, you know, first thing I would do is check the brake light switch and then check the cruise control fuse. There is a separate fuse for cruise.
And it is good. I already checked that one.
Okay. And you went back through the switch again, and the switch is tested as good.
It appears to be, yes. I would have to pull it back out again just to reaffirm it on the bench.
Do you still have the old switch?
Unfortunately, in taking it out, a little frustrated, got a little forceful, and it kind of bent it up. I can't even say it's a reliable switch to test on there.
Okay.
That's the problem with it. And lo and behold, it's a $40 switch, which, you know, in the price of vehicles isn't much, but I was a little taken aback by the price of the switch.
Right. I would go back and take it. Well, listen, we'd have to look. I'd have to look and see what it is from a Honda dealer, because where do you find out the Honda dealer's $30?
Then
you'll wonder what's really going on. You know, I would, obviously, here's how I'd do it. There's a light green wire at the brake switch.
A white, the power hot coming in is a white switch or a white wire. And then back to the brake lights is a green with a white on it.
Right. And that's, so what I want to do is I want to check for, well, power should come in on the brake switch on the light green wire with the key on and the cruise switch on.
I think it's vice versa, actually, looking at a schematic. Its power is on the white wire.
Okay. If you have no power, though, check, where does the fuse come in? The fuse comes in on the white wire or the white with the green?
On the white wire and then leaves off the white and green.
Okay. I almost wonder if that schematic's backwards. I've always seen it the other way. But regardless.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
We should have power coming in, then. Go ahead.
It was difficult to find the schematic online. I don't have a Chilton's manual for it where I can actually go through and find an actual wiring diagram, but what I was digging up online, it appears that the white wire is positive or power on there.
Do me a favor.
It is a
dual-purpose
switch. I mean, the cruise and the brake.
Right. Do me a favor, Corey. Send me an email. Send me a VIN.
Okay.
Send me the VIN for this car. Let me go back and look up a wiring diagram, and I'll email it to you.
Okay.
Let's do it that way, because this really should be a matter of, you know, my memory is power on the brake light switch, which should be the light green wire, key on, cruise switch on, should have power. If it has no power, go through the cruise control fuse. You got to make sure that the power that's coming in goes to pin 6, which is the black yellow wire at the cruise control main switch.
Okay.
And then when that switch is pressed, the power leaves that pin, leaves that on pin on light green wire. Yeah, right. If that, the switch has failed. I kind of think you got a bad brake light switch.
But I would think even with that, the shift solenoid being energized, that it would work its way to the cruise switch. So there's got to be power coming off that, or is it that opposite side of the switch?
Right, which is, something's backwards here. Okay. Something doesn't sound right.
Gotcha.
That's
what
I want.
It appears there's only one way to put the switch in.
Right, yes, that is correct. Yeah, you'd have to really work at it to do that back, to do that wrong. So let's put an end to it. Send me a VIN.
Okay.
Send me a VIN, and I'll VIN match it to the wiring diagram, and then I'll send it back to you, and we'll go from there.
And I'll find your email address online.
It's just ron@cardoctorshow.com.
Okay.
That's
very good,
easy.
Sir.
All right, sir, and then we'll go from there.
Thanks.
Good luck to you, Corey. Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's go up to Andy in Cape Cod, and some questions here on the Honda Ridgeline. Yeah, Andy, how are you? Welcome to the Car Doctor.
Hi, Ron. Thank you very much. Ron, I do have a question. I have two vehicles now. I have a 96 Buick Park Avenue, which is absolutely fantastic vehicle. Hope I keep it forever. I also have a Dodge Ram pickup. I am trying to downsize to one vehicle, but I will keep the vehicle, the car. I'm looking either a Honda Ridgeline, a Ford Sporttrack, or a Subaru Baja. None of those are currently made, with the exception of the Ridgeline, but I have heard that Ridgelines have a systemic rear axle bearing problem that has never been fixed, even if you replace the rear axle bearings. I'd like to know if that's true and what you would suggest of those three, the Sporttrack, the Ridgeline, or the Subaru Baja.
The Ford.
I'm trying to get it to work both as a light-duty pickup truck and an all-purpose vehicle.
The Ford.
A car.
The Ford. Yeah, simply because out of those three choices, who was it, Subaru? What'd you say, Subaru, Ford, and who was the third one?
The Honda Ridgeline.
Right. Out of those three manufacturers, Ford shares information with the aftermarket mechanics the easiest. Let's face it, I'm biased. Ford makes it easier for me to do my job so I can do my job to make you happy. And that's really the bottom line. Ford makes information available to us at a much more affordable price than Honda or Subaru. Honda is second to Ford, and then Subaru is last in my mind.
All right. Well, these type of crossover vehicles like the Honda Ridgeline or the Ford Sporttrack, they seem to be a niche vehicle that people don't make anymore.
Right.
Mostly car, but a pot truck. Do you know of any systemic rear axle bearing problem with the Ridgeline?
I'm not aware of any systemic problem like that. I have heard some other issues. I'm not impressed by the Ridgeline, Andy, to be honest with you. You know, we see them in the shop. Yeah, there's a few, not a ton. But it's like this weird car they weren't quite sure what it wanted to be when it grew up, and that's the way it always came across to me. It's sort of a pickup truck, but it's not. It seems kind of boxy. It's sort of ugly. It really has no appeal to me. I don't see it. I would look at other things. Then I get into the fact. The one thing that drives me crazy about Hondas, absolutely bonkers, is anytime you talk to anybody in a Honda dealership, in a tech department, they don't want to talk to you. Their service departments just keep everything in-house. They don't think anybody else in the world can fix cars. And you know what, dude? I'm sorry. I made a living fixing cars, and I think I'm pretty good at it. And I think I'm worth listening to if I've got a question or a comment about something. And I think there's a lot of other guys out there like me that if they have a question or a comment, they deserve to be heard. And
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Honda just takes this position that we're Honda, we never make mistakes. And that's wrong. You know, everybody makes mistakes. You know, you had a comment.
Well, the thing, I'm glad what you said about the Ford. My preference was the Ford Sporttrack, which is made on an Explorer chassis. They haven't made that since 2010, but that type of vehicle, half car, half truck, no one really makes anymore, and they're all commanding top dollar used. The prices of the used Sporttracks are off the chart. But that was my first preference. I'll keep looking for one if that's what you recommend.
Yeah, I would pick the Ford. Let me ask you a question real quick, Andy. How do you listen to the show up there in Cape Cod?
I listen to it typically when I'm traveling back every Sunday from my camp in Northern Maine. And I believe it's 103.9 and 101.3.
The Voice of Maine, yeah.
The Voice of Maine. That's yep. where I listen to it, yep. The Voice of Maine.
Just curious.
And I habitually travel on a Sunday, and I listen to it on the Voice of Maine every week I can.
Well, I'm glad to have you there, Andy. Thank you very much.
Well, Ron, thanks for your help. Have a good day.
You too. Take good care. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900, the Car Doctor's 24/7 number. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on Denny and the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Let's get over and talk to Denny in Louisiana. Boy, I tell you what, the show's all over the country today. Holy cow. I guess that's what they mean by syndicated. Let's go talk to Denny in Louisiana. Hey, Denny, welcome to Ron. I'm sorry, man. I'm just, you know, sometimes I get overwhelmed by what this is. You know, it's just amazing to me. So how can I help you, sir?
Well, first, a big fan, great show. Always learn something when I listen.
Thank you.
The problem I have is I have a 2003 Cadillac DeVille with North Star engine. It's a wonderful car, belonged to my father, and I purchased it from him. And it runs great, no problems with it at all, except it kills every once in a while.
Okay.
And there's no vibration, no nothing. It just goes dead and it starts right back up. And it's normally when you're slowing down maybe to make a turn. You might drive it for 2 or 3 weeks and nothing happens, and it might do it 2 or 3 days in a row once.
Any fault codes?
It never happened on the road.
Any fault codes?
Or anything.
Denny, any fault codes come up?
Yeah. I had service engine. I don't remember what the exact code was, but it was crankshaft position sensors.
335?
I just don't recall.
Okay. 335, 336, 385, 386, or 1599 may be set, which are not completely uncommon. They are indications of fault in the crank sensor area of the vehicle. Now, what's sort of unique is this particular vehicle has two crank sensors. It has a high and a low. It has an A and a B.
Right.
All right. We'll make the assumption, the first part of the, there's a bulletin out about this, bulletin 0206. I'll go slow. I'll remember this slowly. 02-06-04-019. It's been out there a good 10, 12 years. One of the first things it talks about is making sure that the crank sensors are in their correct position because the A and the B can be switched.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want to make sure of that. I mean, I doubt it. I'm sure, the problem appeared and it wasn't there one day and then it was the next. Nobody swapped the sensors. But what they talk about is some very specific things about doing a drag test on the crank sensor terminals, making sure that they have good connectivity from harness to sensor. And then they talk about changing the sensors based on date code.
Right.
This is a very common problem. Now, and let me put this caveat out there. Here's a case where absolutely positively, I would only use a new sensor, a GM or a Delco piece with GM part numbers on it. And,
right.
And here's why. Car's 14 years old.
Right.
You know, the blueprint of the part that went to the aftermarket, did they ever catch up and redo this bulletin? I don't know. It depends on the brand of part, to be quite honest. And, you know, there's good and bad and all, but I'm just trying to be cautious and avoid having to change these sensors twice because they are in an ugly location. All right. You know, they're in a great spot if you can bend your wrist sideways. Okay. You know, it's sort of like if your knees worked backwards and your wrist worked backwards, then you could change these sensors with no problem. But other than that, you're taking half the car apart. It's ridiculous.
So
that being said, one of the things you could do if you wanted to diagnose it is if your mechanic has a lab scope, I would have no problem going to the PCM and what we call it wave out the crank sensors. Get at least a 2, if not a 3-channel scope, use another signal to verify. Just watch the crank sensor signals. Are they correct? Do they ever blank out? Do they ever, fail? Would be a great way to diagnose it because crank sensors will cause that exact condition. It's all over the internet. Everybody's talking about it. And
definitely.
The thing that amazes me is they talk about it, and if I read some of the fine print, they don't go through the rest of the bulletin because the rest of the bulletin talks about there's also concerns with grounds off the PCM, all right? There's also some concerns about the PCM internally as well, all right? And then they also talk about problems with the fuel pressure regulator and leaky injectors. I mean, there's a bunch of things. This bulletin is definitely worth reading and taking a look at. So tell your mechanic, like I said, it's 02-06-04-019. It's in Section 6 in the GM bulletins back then. That's how they did it under engine systems, and it's dated April 2003 or 2002, something like that. It's quite old.
Right. I even went to the local Cadillac dealer to ask them that specific question, and they told me no, they didn't have anything at all.
Yeah, well, that's okay. The guys in the dealership are too young. They don't remember anything that old. So you gotta be a fossil like me in order to fix this stuff. All right, sir.
I got you.
Do that if you got
a
problem.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You know where to find me if you need me. Ron at cardoctorshow.com. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, and I will be back right after this.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something. as I fall off my chair.
Welcome back. Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor. By the way, just keep in mind, 855-560-9900 is 24/7. You can call, leave a message, and we will call you back and get you in queue for the next live show. We are live on the network Saturdays, 2 to 4 p.m., and I see Tom walking up to the microphone. He must have a question. Yes, well, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, at your service, sir. How can I help you?
Well, not really a question, but we were talking during the break. We got all these calls coming from all over the country.
How is that?
I don't know, but I don't think you quite realize how big this show is.
Well, I don't think I do, Tom. I just, well, I, you
let,
know.
Well, let me tell you the story. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I was up at a client station up in Elmira, New York, and I came down the hill and came out of the hotel the next morning to find a nail through the sidewall of my tire.
Yeah, right. You texted it to me.
Yes.
Yeah, you never told me. What ended up happening with that?
Well, I ended up going over to the tire place, and, you know, I mean, this car. People wondered, do you put mileage on the car? Yeah, it was 15 months old. It has 68,000 miles on it. So these are the original tires that came on the Ford Escape. So I figured, just do all four. So the guy comes out and he looks at me, he says, you know, these back tires are wearing awful funny. They're wearing on the inside. I said, really? I says, I just had the car to Ron and Anian's the other day, and he didn't say a thing about tire wear. And he looked at me and went, Ron and Anian, like the Car Doctor? I said, yeah. He says, I don't think you need an alignment. And he walked away.
I think I want red jelly beans in my studio next week. Can I get those?
Sure.
So, wow. Well, listen, I'm, you know, that is weird. And yet,
it is.
It is weird. It's. Listen, I still remember the story way back. We were on vacation one year down in South Jersey, and I'm sitting on the beach wearing an RA Automotive Home with a Car Doctor T-shirt, and some guy came up and started talking to me and like, do you know the Car Doctor? And I was like, well, maybe. And that was a whole nother conversation. But yeah, wow. So listen, I am very glad and very happy to be here to get to talk to each and every one of you every week, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.